Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special, very controversial episode of Uncanny Treks. We are talking Four and a Half Vulcans. That is Episode 8, Season 3, Star Trek Strange New Worlds. I am Bob in Cascadia, Matt in the Southland. Matt, how are you doing this fine evening?
Doing pretty well, Bob. So if you had the option to be ejected with something and become a Vulcan, would you do it, Bob? Would you take that injection?
On the one hand, Matt, I'm really tempted to say no, because it does seem controlling your Vulcan or your Romulan tendencies is a real full-time job, and it sounds unpleasant, and I don't want to know how bad I smell and how bad my house smells. But on the other hand, the Vulcan lifespan is low 200s, right? So yeah, I'm going to do that.
You could live a lot longer, but man, it seems very, very complex and complicated. So we're talking about Vulcans, Bub. Four and a half Vulcans, to be precise.
Four and a half. What goes down in four and a half Vulcans?
So after becoming Vulcans for a mission, Pike, Chapel, Uhura, and Leon experience issues when reverting back to human form.
Or rather, when not reverting to human form.
Exactly. They have a couple of problems going on here.
To begin early on, Matt, do you think it's a little unfair that Captain Batel is press-ganging Pike into cooking so she can have professional advancement?
He is a good cook. She's using that to her advantage, and it could work. She's smart like that. She knows how to play to her strengths, or at least to her network.
I hate to see it when people exploit their network.
That's just because you don't have much of a network, Bob.
Clearly, I just wish I had a network that I could lean on professional advance.
And Bob, that's why you need LinkedIn. Just kidding, guys. We're not really going to go there.
Man, there was a very funny tweet from one of those guys, Mock and Grindset guys on Twitter. I realized my problem was I was dating women in their 20s. They have no cap, no connections, no network. So now I'm exclusively dating men in their 60s.
See, there you go. That's what you got to do. You got to get them connections. Yeah.
Or get a sugar daddy.
But that's not what's going on with Batel here.
She's just exploiting Pike's skills in an aggressive way. Slay queen, slay queen. I do have to ask, Matt, given where this episode goes with her getting the promotion offer, does that mean by either the last two episodes of this season, or if not, then definitely in season four, she's going to wind up court-martialing another Enterprise crew, probably Pike, right?
For sure, something's going to go down.
I hadn't thought about this, and I do wonder if the show might go here, is by putting the Gorn in Batel, they've made her an interesting double figure for Una being genetically engineered as well.
True. And they've also given the Gorn, the visualization of the Gorn now in Batel. Whereas before, they wouldn't have been able to do that because they can't really show the Gorn on screen as much. Because the plot device of sending them to sleep for the winter, they're a hibernation, that you're not going to see until Kirk sees them again in TOS.
Although we might still have some alternate universe, alternate timeline stuff.
But you've got Batel acting as a connection to the Gorn because they're not going to actually show Gorn on the screen.
Like you were saying, visual representation or avatar.
There you go. That's the word. And just to remind everybody that there's Gorn inside her, and that thing could pop out any time.
Well, Matt, as we go into the staff meeting about the mission, is Palia trying to high-five Pike or shoving Pike? Which is funnier?
The high-five is pretty funny. Pike really not knowing what was going on. That cracked me up really bad.
It suggests that Pike's already a little.
Kids high-five all the time.
Although, I do think it is on the wane. You've got dapping to...
It replaced it. So maybe in that sense, the high five won't be something in this particular era.
It is funny because we have this mission, which actually turns out to be the shortest mission I think we've ever seen in Star Trek. I think even shorter than Lower Decks. But the mission to repair the nuclear reactor on Tezzar, I did like that it was an interesting Prime Directive exception, right? That on the one hand, they're violating the Prime Directive, but on the other hand, they have to minimize it, and it's this edge case. I really appreciated that the show or the episode went there and gave us an interesting exception.
Was it meant to be sort of a commentary on having a full Vulcan crew would be more efficient and effective than a human crew who usually has so many mishaps and problems when they beam down for missions?
I just appreciated that it seems like the Vulcans, I can't remember if they said they did this before they were so dogmatic about the Prime Directive, or if they were just, well, we can't let this planet die.
Yeah.
But I like that it's okay. We're going to minimize intervention, but we're not just going to let a planet die. Whereas like hardline interpretation of the Prime Directive and the 23rd century and the 24th century just seems to be, no, you let the planet die.
That is a bit of a change. I guess it's darker times.
Matt, not only does High Five sort of hang on in the person of Palea, but apparently you can still get LSD in the 23rd century.
Bob, is LSD on its way out? Is that still a thing?
No. The kids still like LSD. Granted, there's a much wider range of hallucinogens than there was in the 60s now, and I think LSD is as ubiquitous, probably because it was being pushed by the CIA in the 60s. LSD.
I have another name that I'm just not familiar with.
Acid?
Acid, okay.
I'm sure there are other nicknames, but those are the only ones I know offhand.
I need an updated DARE lesson at 40, Bob. I need a cop to come in and talk to me about drugs.
And that's something you could arrange for your job, Matt, is not only do the cops need to come in and talk to the kids, they need to talk to the teachers.
My curriculum hasn't been updated in a long time. I need to know the new names for these drugs.
Running off early aughts curriculum. It's not good, man. It's not good. So once our four crew members go under the transformation, become Vulcan for this mission to Tezzar, I found it really funny that all four of them instantly become racist to Spock. And they also, all four, instantly have to say Vulcan in every sentence. That was really funny. And then I called it before they did of, oh no, La'an's gone full Romulan.
You could just see it. You could see it in her eyes. That's why she'll be my character of the week, just because of her acting ability. She let it slip she was a Romulan just through her facial expressions and the way she acted Vulcan. And
yeah,
because we were able to figure that out beforehand, she's an awesome vet. She was my favorite of the four. I will say, of the four, Bob, I really liked everything going on there with the controlling piece. I like that. Pike, on the other hand, this is going to be a little controversial. I was not a huge fan of Pike's acting as a Vulcan.
Okay, I could see that. On the one hand, it was Pike's Vulcan hair, which is, spoilers, he's going to be my character of the week. Nothing about the acting, just about his Vulcan hair. But I thought the show did a somewhat subtle job of showing why Batel and Pike are so irritated at each other at the end of this episode. Because clearly, granted, you see this with the other three Vulcans too. But with Pike, it clearly really, really magnifies things he actually does resent about Batel, successfully keeps buried and never seen.
Yeah.
And so that he's doing this compulsive cleaning and that he's really bothered by her presence in the kitchen. I thought that was really funny. And it is one reason she is so furious.
Anson Mount, I don't know. There were just some scenes that just stuck out where he seemed like he was trying too hard to be Leonard Nimoy. He was a human acting Vulcan. As opposed to being Vulcan. That sounds insane to say, but that's just it.
I can sort of see it.
Whereas she fits straight into the Vulcan character. It was just, okay, she's Vulcan.
We'll talk a little about Vulcan and Uhura. It was, at first, when we had the previously on segment, right, and we saw Beto in that pretty prominently, I was, oh no, I didn't want to see more Beto, right? But him dealing with Vulcan Uhura is really funny. And then the fact that it goes into Uhura consensually mind melding and brainwashing
right
to being a vegan is hysterical.
That outfit that he does show up in, it looks like he wore that to the set. I'm not really sure if they even had a wardrobe change his outfit. I think he's going to be getting the axe soon.
It was also amusing, although they didn't go with this as strongly as I thought they might, but as soon as Vegan Kirk beamed on, speaking of vegans, as soon as Vegan Kirk beamed on, I was, oh man, we're definitely doing Spock and Kirk compete over La'an. This is interesting.
There's a lot of competition because you also got in Chapels 2, Spock and the archaeologist Corby.
Matt, there is one point that I want to raise to you, and this might really, I don't know, maybe the original series or those original scientists style cause you to have an evil computer breakdown. Because on the one hand, your favorite Vulcan, La'an, and on the other hand, your least favorite Vulcan, Pike, have this really awkward conversation about how they both had Romulan time travel experiences. Did you like that non-conversation, or did the fact that you love La'an as a Vulcan went out, or the fact that you hate Pike as a Vulcan went out?
While it was funny, at the same time, it's a little too meta for me, Bob.
I thought it was great. I can see why it might not work for everybody. One last question about the individual Vulcans or individual Romulans here. So we have Lynn Chapel breaking up with Corby, and I was wrong, obviously, but I had the thought when she breaks up with Corby, it was like, oh, maybe that'll just be the end of the subplot. That's a really amusing way to handle it.
I thought the same thing, Bob. I was like, dang, this is how they're going to end this? They built this dude up for a couple episodes and made him seem we're going to have this crazy love triangle, and then bam, she's going to cut it off when she turns Vulcan.
now we have to come to what's potentially the most controversial part of the episode. We get a new Vulcan character, Matt. We get the love of Number One's life, the love of Una's life. We get Patton Oswalt playing Doug the Vulcan. What did you think, Matt?
Doug the Vulcan, Bob. Is it two Lower Decks?
I don't think so. I guess it seems like people really don't like Patton Oswalt as a Vulcan based on what I saw in the serialized reactions to this episode. But I don't know. I'm on an interesting middle ground of, I thought it was mildly funny. I didn't love it, but I never need to see Doug the Vulcan again. But I also didn't hate it.
It was okay for what it was. I will say that Number One's Rebecca Romijn acting and out of character for Number One to some degree, having to do the play this puppy love type thing, it didn't mesh well.
I disagree. I was going to say, even though I'm pretty meh on Patton Oswalt and I'm pretty meh on Doug the Vulcan, again, you don't hate him, but not over the moon. But I thought the scenes of both La'an giving Number One crap early in the episode, and then Spock having to be Number One chaperone during the meeting with Doug.
That was funny. Spock's involvement was hilarious.
I like Number One breaking character, and Spock and La'an reacting to her somewhat breaking character, Spock more so. So I would really defend that part of it strongly. The actual role of Doug as the catalyst for that, I'm a little more male.
Doug was just a hot Vulcan, I guess, Bob. He's just what all the ladies want.
Indeed.
Did you watch the post-credits scene?
I did, and I did not think it was super funny or super necessary, but I also did not hate it.
It was okay. There were some lines that were funnier. Now, the smile at the end from Spock, the big old shit-eating grin, was that too much, Bob? Should it have just been a little smirk?
Not to me, especially in the context of he's been having a conversation with... I think in context of he's pointedly exploring human culture in that whole conversation. And if you think about it psychologically, this is the first time that Spock has ever met a Vulcan who's affirmed and validated his human half.
Right.
In that sense, it makes psychological sense. I knew as soon as I saw it that a certain segment of the fans would be furious.
So his human half is having the time of his life.
I did want to ask, did you feel like there was more sublimated aggression into sexual tension in this episode between Spock and La'an or Pike and Batel? Because, oh boy, there's a lot of sublimated aggression in both couples.
The tension between Spock and La'an is so much more sexual, though. Whereas with Pike and Batel, they just remind me of an old married couple on the Enterprise at this point.
Amusingly, you have La'an freaking out to Number One about finding Spock's socks in her corner.
Right.
And it's like, you can definitely tell that give it 2 years and Spock and La'an would be Pike and Batel.
Yes, you got it.
One other thing I thought was mildly funny was, so the guy who plays Pasal, the Vulcan legal admiral who's offering Batel the promotion, his name is Graham Somerville. And I thought he looked really familiar in the dinner scene in Pike's quarters. And so I did some looking, and I couldn't find anything else he'd done in TV at all. He's apparently a theater actor in Canada and just has been on hardly anything TV-wise or movie-wise. But I guess I was just recognizing him because he was in the trial episode in season 2 where Una's on trial for being Illyrian. But what was really reminding me so strongly was in the transmission at the end of the episode when he offers Batel the promotion. It was, oh, he does look like J.K.
I got the same when I saw him eating at the dinner with them. I was, oh, yeah, he looks a lot like J.K.
Thank you. Yeah. Way to validate and not gaslight me. I did want to ask, do you remember there was a fight scene that we thought was maybe not super well done? Was that the fight scene in the Cube episode?
Yeah, there was one there, I believe.
Between the Gorn possessing Batel.
Correct.
And the parasite possessing the nurse.
Correct, yes.
Yeah.
They both become the opposing. Batel becomes a Gorn, ready to fight, and then the nurse becomes possessed.
And if I remember right, the actors are doing a good job moving like they're possessed, but the choreographer failed them because the actual choreography of the fight isn't well done. Their movements before the fight are well done.
Yeah, but it may have just been reminiscent of, like, the original Star Trek.
Maybe it was potentially awkward William Shatner in the 60s.
It's like,
I did want to say, in contrast to that, I thought Spock and La'an doing a mental fight scene into a dance scene, I thought that was much better choreographed and executed than that prior fight scene.
That was very well done. These two need to be on Dancing with the Stars. Man,
really?
Get them on there.
All right, Matt. And we mentioned this already. And look, it's good to not be jealous. Spock being a logical Vulcan, not a jealous guy. I hope generally in the 23rd century, we're all a little bit more psychologically healthy about relationships than we are in the 21st. All that's good. But it is still a little weird to have Chapel have a joint apology dinner for both her fiance and her ex-boyfriend, right? That's a little weird.
Oh, it's weird.
I'm definitely saying it's even fine for Chapel, Kirby, and Spock to hang out, right? That's fine. But I just feel Chapel apologizing to them as a unit. Unless they want to be a polycule. And if they want to be a polycule, that's cool, but they should just be a polycule.
Don't pull a B5 on us, guys. Just put it out there.
The last thing I wanted to say, Matt, although in a way, like, Kirk and Uhura are tight. And we mentioned this, I think, 2 episodes ago in that super prequel episode, that it's funny that of the original series crew, Uhura is the first one to really like Kirk. But I do find it funny that it's Kirk and Scotty who are the first ones who get really tight and are drinking buddies, cruising buddies, caper buddies, way before Kirk and Spock or Kirk and McCoy. I just find it really funny that Kirk and Scotty get there first.
I don't know enough about Scotty's drinking, but he drank before the Enterprise, or is that an ongoing thing?
We mentioned this earlier in the season, and I might be misremembering, but as I recall, it basically seemed Scotty didn't drink or didn't drink very much before this season. And so it seems there's a joke slash a dark thing of Scotty's exposure to all this stress on the Enterprise and exposure to the bad influence of Kirk and maybe also Mbinga.
That's what I'm getting at. Maybe there's a lot of a negative influence on Scotty from the Enterprise. Maybe
I'm going to bring up something real dark, and you feel free to not deal with this if you don't want to deal with this. We can even cut. But like, it's Trump too, right? The vibe is shifted. We're not woke anymore.
Right.
There's ways that's a little ridiculous, right? Trump won the popular vote, but it wasn't that huge a victory, blah, blah, blah. Should the entire culture really shift? But on the other hand, the man did win a second term, and that does mean something. And at least. So, okay, the vibe is shifted. At least the prior form of woke has come to an end. So Strange New Worlds, all the other New Trek shows, but especially Strange New Worlds and Discovery. Discovery more so, but still Strange New Worlds too. Really woke, right? And it's interesting that I'm not sure that this is what the show's doing, but it seems like making a running joke out of Scotty developing alcoholism. That seems pretty unwoke. And I don't necessarily think you should read this episode this way, right? But this episode could very easily be read as a super anti-trans allegory, right?
Oh, yeah, it could be. They're not all quite 100%. They all claim to be 100% Vulcan, but at the same time, they're still dealing with character flaws that are not promotion.
And there's rhetoric about how their souls or their katras are still human.
Correct, and they have to get back to their katra. I can see that, Bob.
And I don't think you should read the episode this way, and I don't think the writers mean for it to be read that way, but I do just want to say I definitely understand why people read it that way, and can't sit here and tell you like that's wrong, right? Or that's crazy. Obviously it's not. And I do think it is an interesting evidence of this, and there's something similar. We don't have to go into the particulars of it, but there's something similar is going on in the Alien Earth show as well. And the guy who writes the Alien Earth show has done super, super woke shows too. Fargo and Legion, especially in the later seasons of both, are pretty woke. I would say late season Fargo is so woke that it actually somewhat compromises the show. Not that being woke itself is necessarily bad, but you can get so woke that you forget to do basic plot things. Yeah. And that's where the last 2 seasons of Fargo have been, even though they've been pretty strong. And so I just find it really funny, interesting that these two very woke science fiction entities, Noah Hawley as a science fiction writer and then Star Trek as a fairly woke franchise, are responding to the Trump vibe shift in this way. But again, I'm not saying that they're actually meaning to be anti-trans, but just in the different cultural environment, they're not as concerned about doing episodes that could reasonably be perceived as anti-trans.
What Bob was trying to say is they're not being as careful as they used to be.
Yeah, and obviously trans people deserve full civil rights.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We're not saying we're in support. We're just pointing out.
Yeah, it's an interesting sociological shift. Worth thinking about. I'm not saying there's anything to do about it or whatever, but it's just worth thinking about. All right, Matt, well, depressing note. We already said our character of the week. Mine was Pike's Vulcan hair, to be very precise. Not Pike, Pike's Vulcan hair. And your character of the week was La'an. Anything else to leave the listeners with, Matt?
I think we're good. We only have 2 episodes left in this season.
Oh, my God. Only 2 left. And then maybe we should do a season recap, too. I think we might have forgotten to do one for season 2.
We'll have to go back and look. And if we didn't, maybe I wouldn't mind going back and doing one anyway, just to make sure, because we need to know where those episodes fall on our rankings.
And we could also maybe do some provisional numbers, since we'll be well over halfway through the show, right? Because we've got a 4th season and then an abbreviated final season, 5th season. So we can run some numbers at being well over the halfway point.
Right.
I look forward to that. Well, listeners, you've got at least 3 more weeks of Strange New Worlds content from us before the long break. So we hope you join us. I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. Have a great night, everyone.
Thanks for listening.